Welcome to the big show. It's After the Buzzer with Mike Gross and Gordy Jones, hanging out with a pretty special guest tonight. He is Todd Rucci, who played at Penn State, played football at Penn State, played football in the NFL, played football in the Super Bowl in 1997, Super Bowl 31. You may remember that for the Desmond Howard kickoff return that was so decisive. Todd may not want to remember it for that, but that's reality there. That's reality. And now he's a football dad, yes, more than a football player. So we're going to talk about all of this stuff with Todd Rucci. Welcome to After the Buzzer, my man.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. We're excited to be here.
Playing in the Super Bowl, we hear so many ex-players talk about what it's like. It's almost beyond, you know, I remember when I was a little kid watching the Super Bowl, it was almost like I had to smack myself in the head and say, this is really just a football game. It's kind of crazy. What sets it apart, or were you able to see it as just another football game?
You know, I think it's a journey. You know, I think you start out just like any other year, and I don't think any team, you know, you throw it up there on the wall as far as expectations, and this is the, you know, the purpose is to go and play for the big one. And you start off, and it's this journey. And you know, I think every team goes through, you know, the preseason, and you start off, and the first 8 weeks, I think you just try and find yourself. You try and find what you are. But it is throughout that season, the chemistry changes because you have injuries. There may be some, you know, some new faces in the locker room through trades or injuries or how that works. So, you know, between a 16-week season, you have four preseason games. It's such a long road to get to that final game, yeah, to get there. Parcells always said it, to get to that tournament. You know, I think you're so focused on completing it. You're so focused on, you know, finishing the task at hand because you've been working at it for so long that I don't, yeah, necessarily, you don't grasp it all at once. I don't think it was probably months later that I kind of realized, you know, what just happened.
That's interesting because, yeah, it sounds like you're saying it was the culmination of a long process. It really is nothing more or less than the championship game of a tournament, right? I mean, that sounds like you could see it that way.
It really is. And you got, you know, from this, and there's so much that goes into it because physically, I mean, the toll that it's taken on guys, the guys are getting hurt and literally getting better within the season because it's such a long season. So the dynamics of the team are playing and the dynamics of the teams that you are playing are changing. And just to get the opportunity to, you know, to get to the playoffs and you're all in. And, you know, you get to that next game, you're all in. And then you're finally, you know, to be the last two standing and have that opportunity to play for it. It's amazing. It was a great ride. You know, it kind of sucked for me because we lost and I have a different taste in my mouth with it. But I truly appreciate the journey of it. Yeah. You know, I think that's the cool thing about it. And it's what these guys are going through right now.
Do you look back at anything about that game? Does anything stick with you or is it all just kind of a blur?
You know, probably the biggest thing for me, you know, because I was a fat lineman that never got any media, never got any press. No one really cared what the hell I said or wanted to talk to, you know, talk to the lineman. But that week when we went to the media day, you know, everyone was being interviewed. And I remember just saying, you know, stuff or making up stuff just to see if it ever, you know, someone would print.
That's funny.
It was, you know, back in my home paper, back in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, you know, sure, the Delco Times. It was interesting because, you know, here's this, you know, Delco kid that's playing in the Super Bowl. And, you know, that was really kind of, it hit home for me that week, mm-hmm, because here's my home school paper, mm-hmm, you know, that I played high school with, and they're doing an article on the home, you know, the home kid playing in the big game. So I remember that, you know, and other than all the fanfare and being a part of it, but it's just an amazing, it's an experience for sure. Mm-hmm. And depending on, you know, what the scoreboard looks at the end, you know, it's colored a little different.
Mm-hmm. Do you, I think I remember you saying at one point, this is a few years back now, that you don't really watch the Super Bowl anymore. Is that still the case?
Well, I don't watch a lot of NFL games per se, especially in the fall because of, you know, I'm coaching high school football.
Mm-hmm.
I'm coaching throughout the week. Saturdays, I'm doing game film, watching college football. And then Sundays, you know, we're meeting as a staff, breaking down film. So Sunday, I've kind of had my fill of football.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the bowl games are over, I do find myself, you know, putting myself in front of the TV and watching a lot. And this year, especially, because it's kind of neat to see, you know, there's been new teams in the mix. I mean, I love my Pats, but, you know, to have the Titans making around, you know, to see Kansas City in here, it's cool. It's just nice to see some new blood, new teams,
mm-hmm.
and new faces, and, you know, the kind of different dynamics of how each team's made it.
Mm-hmm.
What sets the coaches that you played for, Todd, what sets them apart? What sets them apart in your mind? What makes them unique?
Yeah, I think there's – so I've been – you know, we're talking about having a fortunate, you know, run of coaches. So I went from Parcells to being drafted by Joe Paterno, Bill Parcells, Pete Carroll, to Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The guys that were leading that locker room were amazing. And they were all completely different. I think the Paterno book and the Parcells book were pretty similar as far as how the high demands, expectations, how you conducted yourself.
Oh, okay.
Pete Carroll was a little bit of a different feel. Was a little bit looser, more of a player's coach.
Right.
You know, so the week looked different, how you practice looked different. I don't know if it was better or worse, but it was different. And then Belichick was kind of a rebirth of the Parcells era without the personality of Parcells. it was the same, but without, you know, the verbal and, you know, the abuse and praise and camaraderie. And the Parcells was just, he was crazy. He was awesome. He would just.
Was he crazy, though? Was he crazy, but we respect it and know that this works? Was that the mindset of the player?
Yeah, well, you know, and I say crazy like, in an endearing way. I mean, it was...
Yeah.
He would light you up in a way that was absolutely true. He just didn't hold back. You know, if you had a bad practice, you absolutely knew it the minute you came out of the drill.
Mm-hmm.
And he would tell you in front of everyone, and he'd rip you every which way but sideways.
Mm-hmm.
Although, if you did something great, he'd be the first one to tell you you did something great.
Hmm.
And he had a way of just kind of digging. I would always say, like, he would walk through, you know, stretch before practice, and he just had a way of saying something that would just get your goat and piss you off. hey, are you okay today, honey? Or are you going to take the afternoon practice off, too?
Subtle. It's a subtle humor. Now here's a whole other thing, Todd, which is with your what you're going through with your sons, and we should talk about this because you have one son who's now a tight end at Wisconsin, and you have another one who is a five-star offensive line recruit who has offers from everybody. So contrast what it was like for you to be recruited with what it's like for them to be recruited. I know it's a different world. How are you perceiving the difference?
Yeah, it is. It's not even familiar, to be perfectly honest. I don't recognize it. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea it was like this. You know, Stacy and I, my wife, you know, my wife coached at the collegiate level at Stanford and Duke and recruited herself. But we had no clue of what it was involved. And, you know, fortunately we're in a position where our guys had these opportunities, but
sure.
to see how it works. And a lot of it is just the social media end,
mm-hmm.
You know, because it is absolutely amazing the opportunities that players have because of, you know, huddle films, highlight films that are accessible through Twitter pages and, you know, so a guy sitting in Texas or Oregon can literally just within seconds pull up a kid's highlight reel,
mm-hmm.
and he can watch 8 minutes of highlight reel,
mm-hmm.
You know, without calling a coach, without asking for a VHS tape, without, you know. So I feel really good about there's so many players now who are being discovered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can play football and you put yourself out there, they'll find you. Mm-hmm. you know, so that was interesting to me, and then have, you know, fortunately to have, you know, my older son, to have that opportunity, and, you know, he found Wisconsin to be his perfect fit. But man, we were traveling around every weekend, just trying to talk to coaches, trying to figure out, you know, who was interested, who was really interested, where he was interested. Was it a fit, the academic piece? How, you know, did he care if he went, how far he went away? And all this stuff was really kind of a good drill for us. We kind of, you know, made some goals for him, put some structure of what he wanted that decision to be, what was important to him, not us, not mom or dad, but what he wanted. And really kind of, you know, I don't know if we pushed him down the path, but we sure, you know, just let him make that decision. And he, man, he found his home. And we're, you know, now going through with our younger son, we're so much better at the process because we, you know, we don't get caught up in the shiny glitz or, you know, all that. It's exciting, but it's a process. Definitely a process.
Your phone must never stop ringing.
It is, you know, the upside is no one calls you anymore. So everyone texts and
that's
Twitter
right.
And DMs. And, you know, it's a catch-22 for me because I'm a coach. You know, legally, colleges can contact me directly because I'm a coach. If I were just a parent, they'd be restricted to, you know, they wouldn't be allowed to call me directly. Because I'm a coach at the high school, I've been a coach at the high school, I'm a position coach, they can, you know, just fortunate that, you know, my sons are on the team, so I've been taking the brunt of most of it, which is fine.
I would probably rather. Well, first of all, how's Hayden doing? I would tell, give us kind of a progress report on his first year.
Yeah, so Hayden's doing really well. He left in June. He graduated on, he graduated on a Tuesday, and then we left Thursday to drive him out in June.
Yeah,
dropped him off. So we had, you know, you always hear about, you know, you're dropping your kid off at college and you turn away and you cry for the first mile and a half, and you know, I didn't cry, you know, but my wife and I definitely were some sad eyes coming out of there.
Sure.
But loved it. He absolutely loves the team, loves his class, he loves the locker room, loves his coaches. You know, academically, he was fortunate enough to get into the business school, so he didn't start off in kind of like a warm-up, you know, academic kind of phase. He hit the ground running, and it definitely was a change in high school, but he did really well. He figured out how to manage his time. He wound up redshirting this year. He got an injury early on in preseason that kind of put him back a couple weeks with his shoulder, but fought through it, and, you know, he's learning how to play Big Ten football. You know, the guys look different. It's played a lot faster than it was at Warwick.
Sure.
And, you know, he's making that adjustment, and that it's a great lesson for him. And so, you know, I expect him to, you know, keep progressing, and in his timeline, and he's ready, and the opportunity presents itself. Right? You know, hopefully he'll be able to make the field here in the next couple of years.
Now, Nolan is really a different kind of deal because we're talking about a 6'8", 270-pound offensive lineman, and there's about 30 to 40 five-star players in the United States of America, and he's one of them. So I would imagine this is like supercharged level of recruiting, right?
It's a little different when you get, you know, Dabo Sweeney calling and Orgeron, and you got Alabama and Saban calling. You know, the conversations are different.
It's a little different.
Sure. He's fortunate, man. He's, you know, he has some great genes. You know, that was all part of the plan when I married Stacey Gilbert.
Brilliant. You know, brilliant. Social engineering, man.
5'11", you know, all American, good wheels. I'm like, that we're in. Let's go. Let's get her number.
and her dad played in the NFL, right?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it was all strategic. I sat in the bushes and I was getting 49
You're crafty. You're crafty.
Yeah, well, you gotta have a long term plan. But she's, you know, we are. We are, you know, we're so fortunate to be in this place, and we have, you know, the good kids. Stacy's done an amazing job with them. They're, you know, academically sound. They're great friends. They're in a great school district. They're surrounded by really, really good people. I've taught them a little bit as far as football, but the majority of the stuff is just being surrounded by really good people in the classroom and in the locker room. And Nolan, look, he's 6'8". He's, you know, he's 287 now. He's
oh my god!
Drive.
Wow.
Yeah, he's starting to, you know, put some time in the weight room, but he has, you know, look, he has a lot of tools to play this game, and he's learning. You know, he's learning how to use them correctly. Mm-hmm. And it's a double-edged sword. When you have all those tools, sometimes you can get away with doing things, you know, kind of half-ass or without great technique. But he's starting to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And it's really kind of cool to watch him find his way and find his path and find his identity. Because quite honest, he was Hayden's little brother for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
He's his own deal. And it's kind of cool to have these guys make their own way, and whatever they wind up, wherever they go, it's just kind of fun to watch them and see them have this, you know, some of the same experiences that I had to be able to play this game at the next level.
And the other thing about that, I just thought of this, and I can't give you a whole lot of credit for this, Todd, but Warwick High School generally in sports is kind of a renaissance right now. There's a lot of really good athletes, and therefore your kids have been able to play on really good teams going through that school right now, right?
Yeah, you know what? You're so right. And Stacy and I, when we moved here and, you know, we started putting our kids in, you know, the youth leagues of basketball and lacrosse and football,
yeah.
You know, we started looking around going, man, there's some really good kids around here. And, you know, fortunately, you know, being completely selfish, I've coached at Warwick for 16 years, but, you know, fortunately, my guys have experienced when Warwick football has been really good, when basketball is really good, the girls and men's track, the lacrosse, everything, you know, we've been lucky to have a really good string of classes of not only good athletes, but they're multi-sport athletes, they're super kids, and they get it, and they get along. Parents are great. You know, we're in a good run of, you know, support from the administration. You know, we have great coaches in place, and the hallways of Warwick are just really, really good. It's a great environment for these guys to flourish and give them the opportunity to kind of be their best, and not only on the field and, you know, competition, but, you know, the classroom, I think, is the biggest thing that I'm really impressed with when you talk to these kids. You know, these are all, you know, 3-0 good kids that are, you know, working to their capacity, and they're going to have opportunities to go on and get to college. And some of them are actually going to be able to compete at a sport.
I would think so. Sure.
You mentioned just about the whole grind of an NFL season earlier in the call, and I wonder just how is your health now? You have a big birthday coming up in July. You turn the big 5-0, so how are you doing?
You know what, I just can't believe I'm coming up on that number.
Yeah.
But you know what, I feel great. I hear so many tragic stories of,
right,
you know, guys being banged up and maimed and hobbling around and the CTE and all this stuff, and I just haven't experienced it. You know, I've had 10 orthopedic surgeries, I've had a knee replacement, I had back surgery, I've had a pec torn off, you know, 5 nose breaks, you know, all bushings and bearings and all that stuff. But I feel great. I mean, I have some great doctors here in Lancaster that, you know, is taking care of me and putting parts in. And, but, you know, I wake up, I feel good. I can get around. I can, you know, I don't run anymore, but I can run if I have to. So I do. I feel good. But that comes with some attention too. I try and keep myself, you know, in decent enough shape to survive in a Holocaust now. But yeah, it takes work. But for the most part, honestly, I feel really good.
Because you lost a lot of weight after you got done playing, right? You were down a significant amount after you were done playing, which has got to help, right?
I did. I always had this thing in my head that I was not going to be one of those guys who just exploded. And because I was I probably played the heaviest. I was 305. And then as soon as I was done playing, and I knew I wasn't going to play, when I finally got over the point that my career was over, almost like a panic attack. I just got it all off. I got down to my high school weight of 248.
Wow.
But I felt, I felt awful. I was doing was cardio. I wasn't lifting.
Mm-hmm.
And then now I've kind of found a healthy balance. Mm-hmm. For football season, I gained 10 pounds, and then, I get mad at myself and lose that 10 pounds and get in shape for the summer. And so I think I'm in a place where I can manage it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely a culture shock when you're eating 10,000 calories a day to stay at that weight, and all of a sudden you're eating lettuce and salads and drinking water.
Well, Todd, do you have any sense of what's going to happen in the big game? I mean, I don't know how closely you follow it, but I think it's a really interesting matchup. I'm looking forward to the Super Bowl, even though I don't really care much about either of these teams. I'm not really a fan of either of them. Any thoughts on the game at all?
Yeah, I'm exactly where you are. I don't have any allegiance other than watching a good football game. So literally, I just started watching. Obviously you have some ties because there's some guys you may know that are coaching or playing. I'm old enough that I've got guys I play with are coaching now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I am literally like you. I really, and honestly, it was like that through the college bowl season. Other than rooting for Wisconsin and Penn State, but it was cool to. For me, and as much as I hate to say that, it's nice not to have the Pats playing in the playoffs or the Super Bowl, because now I can just sit back and watch and not root for anything and kind of, be neutral and see what they're doing. So I'm just a fan, man,
I hear you. Yeah, that's fun. Yep.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that I watch the game as a fan and don't get too caught up in 4-3, 4-4 front running a dog blitz here in the right.
There he goes. There he goes.
That's where I get, and that's my issue when I'm watching games. Not start tearing it apart and try and criticize and put my coach hat on.
I thought Tom Bradley might have wrestled the phone away from you there for a minute.
Coach Scrap.
Can't get out of it. Yeah.
I hear you.
I always tell people, don't you watch a lot of football? I'm like, I watch football all the time, but I don't watch football like you watch football.
Yeah, right. It's much different.
You see, he caught a ball, it's a touchdown. Oh, they got a first down. I don't see that. I'm seeing a 4-4 front, they get a one shade with a tree, and they're bringing it back here, and there they should be. So I am caught up in this minutia of stuff that is, it's anxiety to me, because I'm thinking what to do on the other side. How are you going to defend this? It's just different.
Yeah, sure. That's how it is. You're a lifer. You're a football lifer. All right. Hey, Todd, we really appreciate it, man.
Yes, we do.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, no doubt. Appreciate it. And let's go and let's root for a good football game.
Absolutely. Yeah, right. I'm with you.
Thanks a lot, Todd.
Todd Rucci, right, Penn State, New England Patriots. And now football dad and coach. He's still coaching in Warwick High School. Has been for a while. And it's pretty cool. He's one of those guys, he was an offensive lineman for a long time. He wasn't a star.
Mm-hmm.
And to come out the other side of football with everything we know about the health risk.
Yes.
And be in this place where he is. Yeah. Good for him.
I thought it was kind of interesting that he said he was one of the lucky ones, and he's had 10 orthopedic surgeries.
I know. I think people like allow this fact to sort of slide by without really thinking about it. The NFL has 100% injury rate. Yes. There's more than one injury for every player in the league.
Right.
Every year.
Right.
And you're going to get your body damaged playing that sport. Mm. There's no way around
it. I mean, just look at it. Every play is a car wreck. Yeah, literally,
it really
true.
Is. And it's not as physical as it used to be.
Right.
Because well, for a lot of reasons, we don't need to go down that road, but yeah. But it used to be like scarily violent.
Yes.
It's still scarily fast.
Yeah.
I don't think it's quite as scarily violent. If you've ever watched it from the sidelines, which I haven't, I'm sure you have too, a couple times.
Yeah.
NFL football from like right up next to it from the sidelines.
It's crazy.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's and which is actually part of the appeal of it. You can't believe people can go that fast and do the athletic things. To me, anyway. I mean, so other people have a financial stake. However, to me, the most fascinating thing is the athleticism of the players and just the things that they can do, play in and play out.
Yeah,
it's just really kind of an amazing. In fact, several years ago, I went to a Penn State USC game in the Coliseum. The very next day, I went to a Raiders Colts game. And it was I was stunned how much faster it was.
Oh yeah, that's a really good point. I've been on the sidelines a lot for Penn State games.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same.
No,
it's and that's a very high level of
yes.
college football, of course, obviously, but it's not the same.
No, so yeah,
it's a different deal.
It's quite an animal, and so good for Todd that he has come through, and hopefully things will work out for his. Kids, Penn State is recruiting Nolan, as is Alabama and basically every other.
Yeah, he is one of the very few kids who everybody wants.
Yeah.
Notre Dame, Stanford, Clemson, Alabama, LSU, of course Penn State, everybody
yeah.
wants this kid.
I thought it was kind of, I got a chuckle out of when he said all the coaches are calling, including Ed Orgeron. I wonder if his phone has an Orgeron to English app that enables him to.
I like that guy. I
do like too. There's something really refreshing about him because, you know, so many of them seem like the used car salesman vibe, and he does not have that.
And yet, you read, and I've read some things lately about how he really is personable in a one-on-one.
I bet he is.
And he'll call a high school coach. And I saw a little thing where he called a high school coach in his recruiting area, and the coach was like, "Ed, we're 0-10. I don't have any players for you." He goes, "I want to talk to you. I want to meet you." And he showed up like later that day. He showed up
That's
at the school
smart.
And said, "Let's talk some ball. And one of these days, you'll have a player."
Yeah,
for you.
Which is exactly what you're doing. You're laying the groundwork. You know, because when that high school coach does have a player, he'll remember that and say to his player, "Look, this guy's a good guy."
And we must say about Penn State that they are on board with this. They really, really do this.
Mm.
Brent Pry is the assistant coach who covers our area. He'll just go to Cocalico High School and show up and talk to the coach and hang around a little bit and make some contacts. And that's just
smart. Yeah. That's just smart, and in addition to everything else. I mean, it's good personally, and it's good business, too.
Now, I wonder, though, if LSU is going to be a one-year thing.
That quarterback was so good.
He was unbelievable. You lose. Now they lost another. They've lost a couple head coaches, or not head coaches,
assistant
but assistant coaches, and critical pieces. That's starting to feel like, and they've got to beat Alabama, they got to beat Florida, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So it's starting to feel like a one-off to me, and obviously who knows.
But that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. It's funny how just generally in sports, you look back at things, and like the Eagles winning the Super Bowl 2 years ago, that was a one-off.
Sure.
that was them going all in on this quarterback, and let's try to put veteran pieces around this quarterback and figure. And the way it worked out, when they didn't even have the quarterback at the end, they still won it. I mean, that was a one-off that they kind of have paid for since.
Yeah.
And now I think they're at the point where they realize, hey, we really got to turn the page and put that behind and go to a new thing.
Right. And which always begs the question: if you're an Eagles fan, would you rather have that? Or Andy Reid, Donovan McNabb getting, in the hunt year after year after year? I'd say you'd rather have this.
I agree. And I think three-quarters of Eagles fans would agree.
Yeah.
That's what they would say.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if you keep, you know, looking at it in retrospect, those teams with McNabb, Reid, et cetera, they knocked on the door so many times you had to figure that at some point they're going to break through, and they never quite did.
Yeah, that's one of the endless. There's no way to get to the bottom of this question, although it's a really interesting thing to think about and talk about. It is the difference between being there and being close for 10 years, mm-hmm. and is there a really qualitative difference between that and breaking through? Mm. I don't know. They yeah. could have won it,
they
right?
Could have, they, yeah, I mean, even that game against New England, as poorly as they played and as wacky as the last 5 minutes were, I mean, they're sort of in the game.
They were. Yeah, so. They were. And they had some really bad losses in the NFC.
Oh, gosh. Tampa Bay, Carolina, Arizona in 2008, I believe it was. So
yeah. I think in all of those, they might have been the better team in every one of those.
Very possible. I mean, yeah, that was it, weird things happen again and again and again.
Yeah, and how much of them never getting over the top was just weird things happening, mm-hmm. or was it a really qualitative thing? That's what we don't.
It's hard to assess that. Yeah. But at any rate. We move on. The Sixers have just lost another starter. Josh Richardson pulled a hammy last night in the game up in Toronto, and he will be out for at least 2 weeks. So now they're down two starters, and on Saturday night they face the Fighting LeBrons.
Yes,
so Lakers, which means the Sixers out. Will win by about 20.
Are you going to be attending?
I will not be at that. Actually, I have a funeral, but not my own.
Oh, my God, I hope not. These wins that they've ground out lately mm-hmm. without Embiid, they seemed like, except for the Knicks. I mean, the Knicks are just awful. But like the game in Brooklyn, that was a really good, entertaining game, and that was
great.
You can't play much better than Ben Simmons did in that game. That was an amazing performance.
It really was,
and that made you think. Maybe they're starting to. And then
last night he took 7 shots.
Yeah, last night it just did not work offensively.
They took 46 threes. They made 17 of 46. So that's a few too many, I would say. That's
too many, and you wonder how much of this just comes down to whether the threes go in, because their good wins lately have been their wins in the last. Far back as I can kind of remember, against good teams lately have been when the threes have gone in.
Doc Rivers is fond of saying, it's a make or miss league.
Yeah.
And that's very true. I mean, I did love the energy that they played with in Brooklyn. I mean, Brooklyn is not a great team, but I mean, they were hanging around, and then late third, early fourth, they just went on this massive run where Simmons was really good and Matisse Thybulle was sort of mucking it up, which is what he does.
Yeah, but I mean, defensively, they really looked connected. They really looked like almost frantically energetic. And Simmons, you know, he actually scored in that game with like a center. Most of his actual shots that he scored on were like an Elijah one or something.
Right, yeah.
And one of them was a skyhook like Kareem.
There you go.
And he had, I think it was, 34 points on how many shots?
I think it was 14.
14 shots?
Yeah.
He shot without attempting a three.
Of course not.
That's hard to do, man.
34, 12, and 12. That is a big boy triple-double right there.
That is a big boy triple-double and some steals and a couple block shots. He was really good.
The other day I wrote about Matisse, and the numbers are these now. When he plays 14.
This is your go-to stat.
I love this stat.
I am selling it,
and I can't believe that it's coincidence. When he plays 14, 18 or more, they're 23-6. When he plays 19, 40 or more, they're 17-4.
I love the specific number. Yeah, 19-40.
I'm sorry. It's just
that's great. I mean,
I don't think it's coincidence. I mean, he shot a little better last night, but he hasn't been shooting it well since he came back from he had a knee sprain. But he shot it a little better from three last night, and I think he can shoot. It's not that he can't shoot, but he's kind of getting his rhythm back since he was out for.
It's getting to the point where it's hard to believe that it's a coincidence.
Yeah,
I mean, the sample size is getting a little big here to just dismiss it.
Right,
and. He is a guy who is really learning how to do it offensively.
Yeah.
He's not there yet offensively. I think he probably can learn to do it, but defense is why he gets to be on the court.
And
defense is why this statistic. I mean, it has to be why.
Yes. It's really kind of an amazing stat. I don't think it can be coincidence. I mean, I kind of wrote that the other day. It's just like your eyes and your gut tell you that it's not coincidence, that this guy makes a difference.
The big picture thing here, and I've read and heard some other podcasts about this, are Simmons and Embiid really going to be able to play together and thrive? Is that ever going to happen?
I don't know. I mean, it's somebody asked me the other day, a Sixers fan, he said to me, if you had to trade one of them, which one you would trade? And I said, I wouldn't want to make that decision.
That's a tough call.
I would not want to. But at the same time, they play two different ways, depending on who's in the game. Like right now, they're playing more of an up and down frantic kind of style because Ben, among his many strengths, is he's really fast with the ball in his hands for a 6'10 guy. And then when Embiid plays, it's more of, well, we're going to throw it in the mid post and he's going to jab step five times while four other guys stand there.
Yeah.
Or he's going to do that little ball fake from the top of the circle, which.
And that's on him.
Yeah.
Because we've talked about this a lot, but he ought to be putting his body on the low block and then saying, give me the ball.
Yeah.
That's how it ought to be. And then it wouldn't, and then the ball wouldn't stick. Then it wouldn't be four guys standing there watching him.
You wouldn't think, but it's a really odd, it's kind of a misfit toy situation. And I'll be curious to see how they do these next 2 weeks, you know, now that they're down Josh Richardson. We're coming up on the trade deadline on February 6th. So, you know, every day there's a new rumor.
Yeah,
you know,
we'll talk about that.
Derrick Rose, et cetera.
Yeah, Derrick Rose, who's having kind of a renaissance.
Yes, he is. Yeah. So believe what you want to believe. I mean, the NBA has always been notorious for its rumors, and I don't know what the Sixers have to give up. I suspect that they will do better in the buyout market than they do at the trade deadline. That's my suspicion. The 2 years ago when they brought in Ersan Ilyasova and Marco Bellinelli out of the buyout market, that proved to be two strokes of genius.
Good. That was really
both
good.
Those guys really helped them.
Didn't have to give up assets really to make that happen. Yeah,
and those guys really helped them.
Here's a really interesting question with the Simmons Embiid thing.
Mm-hmm.
Think about Giannis with the Bucks.
Yes,
the Greek freak, who might be the best player in the world, or if not, very, very close. And his development over the last 2-3 years has been tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
Could he have developed that way if he was on the same team with Joel Embiid?
No.
There's
no way. There's no way.
He
couldn't. Because they're both ball dominant, and they both kind of play in the same vicinity.
Yeah, and that may not be. It's nowhere near an exact parallel to Embiid Simmons.
Right.
But in some ways, it makes you think a little bit. I don't know.
I mean, the Bucks really built their team intelligently. Basically, it's like Giannis has the middle of the court, and he's got these guys fanned out around him, including Brooke Lopez. He wanders out to the
line. That's right.
So,
he's a three-point shooter.
So the whole lane is open for Giannis, and you can pack the paint, but you can also do that at your own peril because they have some guys who can shoot it.
Although teams were pretty effective packing the paint in the playoffs.
Toronto,
So maybe that will be the thing with him. Is can he figure out how to deal with that? Because he can deal with that. Mm. There's ways to deal with that if you're him.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting to see. Yes. But anyway.
Should we talk about Zion making his long-awaited debut last
season? Zion, you know, I saw a little bit of that, but I didn't see any of the part where he went nuts.
No, I didn't either. I turned it off.
I wish I would have. Yeah.
And, I mean, he looked like he was dragging the leg as he was running most of the game. And then every now and then he would make a play, an explosive play like he makes.
Yeah.
There, the one that I remember is he made this baseline drive around Aldridge and got fouled, which, you know, it was really kind of striking that a guy that big can go that fast.
Yeah, he really is pretty explosive. He's just a physical, anomaly physically. And some people think he's such an anomaly physically that he's never going to be able to be healthy because that body type and that weight and that explosiveness and that leaping ability.
It's a challenge.
It's just a shock to the, an endless shock to the system.
It really is. I mean, he ended up with 22 points in 18 minutes, 4-for-4 from three, and he's not really a three-point shooter.
Yeah, although he's a skilled basketball player.
Oh, yeah,
he has good feel for it, good ball skills, a good feel for it. You hope it works out because it'll be fun to watch for the next 10 years.
Yeah. It really would. I mean, the guy is really entertaining and obviously really has a sense of, you know, how everybody responds to him and really seems to ride that wave. Certainly he did that in college all the time.
And as you said, he had 21 points. He had 17 of them in a row in the fourth quarter. That's pretty good. That is just it. That's pretty, I really wish I would have seen that.
I actually missed that because I went to watch Colbert. So I missed the fourth quarter. I couldn't help but think about this as I was watching the game. The Pelicans, they have some players besides Zion, including Drew Holiday and J.J. Redick, who we all know well from their time in Philadelphia. But they have some excess wings that I wonder if they would, you know, be available. You know, guys like Etuan Moore, Josh Hart, you know, that would be appealing, at least from my perspective, to the Sixers. And, you know, would work as far as what their need is because they can both shoot it a little bit. And I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there as, you know, I guess it's that time of year where you watch these games and you kind of think about, well, how would this guy fit?
You're ensconced in the trade deadline.
I am. It is.
So
there's that.
There's that to deal with. We'll get into the trade line like next week, right?
Mark Zumoff is actually going to join us on February 4th, which is 2 days before the trade deadline.
So. Yeah, there you go.
He'll have a lot to say, I'm sure.
And of course, the Super Bowl is coming, and the NBA is getting more interesting. It's not an obsession.
Yes, it sort of is.
It's this thing we always talk about. I guess that qualifies as an obsession. That's going to get more interesting as time goes. But anyway, it's been fun.
It's always been fun.
We want to thank Todd Rucci for joining us again. He was terrific.
Yes, he was.
And that's it. It's another edition of After the Buzzer is in the Books. He's Gordy. I'm Mike. See you later.